Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Come join us on this trip. No, more like journey. We're throwing out the script. We don't charge a penny. We can't call in. Top star, free bowling.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Free Bowling for another very special episode. Why is it a special episode, Ed?
Really, especially a special episode this week because we're not in Birmingham anymore, Sebastian. We've teleported. We teleported all the way to the sunny shores of Manchester, where we have my good friend Alex Gregson, creator, owner of 344 Post Audio. Well, come on. I'd say come on down, but there's not a lot of room.
You're
here,
already
Alex.
There.
Hey, Alex, can we film in 344? Yeah, sure, Ed, in the smallest room we have. Introduce yourself, Alex.
Hi, everyone. I'm Alex Gregson. I'm the founder of 344 Audio. So we do audio post-production for film and TV. We also sell sound effects libraries online. And finally, we do courses to help other people learn sound for film and TV.
So sound, you own it.
Yeah.
Nice. Sound completed it, mate. That's awesome, dude. Yeah, I've worked with Alex for, I would say, like, I was actually thinking about it, about almost a decade, right? Yeah. Like, my final project in uni.
What was the first film?
The Monster Inside.
The Monster Inside,
yeah. It was a, like, sort of genre.
Got a funny title now, you think about it.
Yeah. I've got a monster inside me right now. I need to expel it. Should have gone before we started recording. But I know Sebastian's heard a lot about you because I always would, like, whenever my American friends start working, I'm like, look, if you need post sound, Alex works remotely for you guys. So yeah, he knows a lot about you. So Sebastian, you know, you've been aware of Alex's presence, right?
I've been aware.
You've been aware.
I've been aware. Yeah.
Is that all? Is that all?
I mean, we also have to plug that we wouldn't have our kick-ass theme songs without Alex.
Holy shit. Yeah, the theme song to Freeballing was we literally went through you to that.
Yeah, yeah.
That was amazing. Yeah. That was so much fun. I was walking through the park trying to listen to that shit.
Trying to get in the zone.
Yeah. Like, someone bumped into me and I damn near decked him. I was like, fuck off. Busy. Yeah. Sir, can you excuse me? No, Grandma. Right. So that's enough of an introduction. We have to talk about you as a filmmaker, and then after the break, well, everyone knows that the break now is the trailer. Spoilers. We'll be talking about Westworld's The Raven and a little bit of the politics of post-sound in the filmmaking industry. But let's kick us off the first question, Seb.
I love that we're going to get into politics in this. I love it. It's great.
Yeah, man.
Right. So, Alex, you know, you are a whiz with sound. Like I said, we wouldn't have our awesome theme songs without you. But what's your origin story? Like, what was it that made you want to get into the wacky world of post-sound?
That's a great question. I love answering this question. So when I was around 12, 13 years old, I discovered audio manipulation programs, and there was people that I knew in school who would take music and kind of reverse it, pitch it down, and you know, speed it up and things like that. And I started doing this as well, and really found the whole concept of this fascinating. Later, I started producing my own electronic music, but what I tend to find when I used to make music was that I would really struggle to finish tracks. So I'd spend ages making the sounds. I'd sample movies. Like, I'd look for all my favorite quotes from movies, sample and put them in my music. I used to make like dubstep and drum and bass and things like that. And I'd spend so much time doing that and so much time crafting the sounds and mixing the sounds that I'd forget that you actually have to finish the track and then you release the track. So many years later, when I studied at college doing music technology and then later studied sound design and sound engineering, I realized that the whole time I was actually a sound designer, not a musician. And I used those skills and transferred them over to the film.
How would you know? You never released your music, damn it. There's a Martin Garrix in you. You just never knew.
Maybe. But I think I knew that if I would pursue electronic music, I would have had to go into the world of DJing and things like that, which is not for me. I'm more of an introverted creator, craftsman, you know, moving the strings gradually to get to an end result creatively. I'm not a in the moment live, let's create something, bang.
Yeah,
you know? So
I can't go into music because Fatboy Slim is already taken, so that's awesome. Was there a specific, like, when you transitioned into post sound, not music creation, well, was there a movie that did it for you, a TV series that did it for you, a mentor?
Yeah, so one of my teachers, lecturers at the time, Luke Warren, was the first person who told me about post sound for film and TV. I didn't even know it existed, even though I was into sound design already.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that what I was doing was sound design and it could be applicable to movies. But my teacher at the time, Luke Warren, from Ashton Sixth Form College, where I studied music technology, said to me, you know, when you finish this course, what are you planning to do? Have you considered studying this? And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And then there was a couple of films as well that inspired me. One of them was Snatch by Guy Ritchie.
Oh.
That film for sound design is huge. If you've watched the film before, anyone watching, I'd recommend next time you see it, watching it with more of a focus on what's happening audibly, because nearly every punchline, every scene where they're building up to something, it has a sound cue that's actually part of the comedy, and without that sound cue the comedy wouldn't work and the timing wouldn't work with the edit.
Yeah.
So that film was something that just spoke to me. I can't explain why, but really early on I just knew there was something special about the way that was done, and I was really proud that that was British as well, and I wanted to be another pioneer in this industry, you know, from the UK. So that was one of the main inspirations.
I mean, my respect for post sound comes from talking and working with you so much, and a movie I really sort of began to understood that, like, the almost the importance post sound plays for me, was Baby Driver.
Yeah
like when there's no music playing, there is actually like a tinnitus, like we are constantly in the POV of Baby, which I thought was like such an amazing like choice to do from Edgar Wright there.
Absolutely, and we actually now work with one of the people who was involved in that film, Pete Burgess. So,
oh, awesome.
He was the Foley artist for the film. So
he also worked on Harry Potter's, right?
Yeah, so he worked on a lot of the Harry Potter films. So it's been amazing having him as part of the team, and he's really been, you know, it's taken someone like him who's from maybe more the London world to really, you know, see what we're offering.
Pull the mic a little bit closer to you.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I can tell by maybe we're a little bit too far away.
Yeah, is that
you
better?
Said you wanted bloopers.
No, you got
them. Yeah, one sec. Let me just
sorry.
It's all right. Where did you? Working
with Pete Burgess.
Yes. So. Oh yeah. An interesting fact is we've just started working with Pete Burgess, who was one of the sound artists involved in Baby Driver. So
yeah,
he was the Foley artist, kind of the master behind all the footsteps, the timing and everything. And some of the things he's talked about on that project are fascinating in terms of how he would try and pitch things to the music. So he would do footsteps and then pitch them to the music and
nice.
Time them to the music and things like that. And yeah, he's worked on tons of things from Harry Potter and everything. But he's originally from this area of the UK.
There's
so
no way.
It's just fascinating how these things come together. and now he works with us up north here as well.
Well, I just want to do a little bit of a shout out. You've like sort of reinvested in your own building here where you work. You've like since I was here doing Westfires the Raven.
Yeah.
Actually, a little bit of a shout out to me. The lever is yours truly. I was helping out in the Foley room. It was awesome. I loved it. But you've completely redesigned the Foley room, right? Mm-hmm. That's yeah. So I've seen the videos. Like, you're huge on Instagram. In terms of a business in filmmaking, I see what you're doing on Instagram, and that's like that's what everyone else should be doing. Oh, it's what I like, even as a writer, it's what I should be doing. It's like it's a good inspiration to me. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, you know, you're constantly uploading consistently, you know, engaging yeah. your audience. It's good stuff. Just back to sort of respect for Post Sound. Sebastian, is there a movie for you that like sort of where you meant like, whoa, Post Sound is actually really important?
You know, it's funny. It's also an Edgar Wright movie, but it was Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, good
again,
shout.
Pete, yeah. Worked on that as well.
Pete and Edgar Wright, they're the best birds.
Absolutely.
It was just one of those things where it's like, I never really paid attention to it, but watching Shaun of the Dead, it felt like I was actively paying attention to it, and it just added to the experience of it. So I think, for me, that's what did it. And then, you know, Baby Driver was just like Shaun of the Dead on another level for me. I was like, damn, okay. I respect Post Sound. Way
I
more
actually
now.
Met the guy who played one of the zombies in that, like one of the main featured zombies.
What?
I had no idea it was him. He looks completely different today. But yeah,
because, you know, zombies aren't real, Alex.
They just woke up one day and didn't look like a zombie anymore.
I know there's that Universal walkthrough ride in LA, but those are actors too, dude. But so that's your inspiration to film. Mm-hmm. Our second question is a bit of an aspiration to film. Mm-hmm. We've had some really good answers here, but sort of the way we've been asking it is like, you know, the biggest possible production you could possibly think of, mm-hmm. you could possibly want 344 to be on, even though you've done some huge projects.
Yeah.
But say you've been given keys to the kingdom mm-hmm. for Post Sound by the producer, the executive producer. What are you bringing in?
I think we would love to. We work best on projects that are heavy on storytelling, and I've noticed this with our clients. We tend to attract if you look at the personality of a director, we've done a lot of studying on this, obviously, because it's our client base. But you can get a director who's more on the technical side, or you can get a director who's really deep into the story. We work best with the more chaotic creative type, so the one whose mm-hmm. mind is
put it through
over.
The sausage.
Yeah, exactly. The mind who's all over the place, and then we can help guide them to that solution. So that being said, the type of projects that would be really great for us to work on would be things like The Revenant or things like Star Wars. You know, I feel like Star Wars has gone off in a bit of a weird direction now, but originally Star Wars was a big one. Anything where the sound is really integral to storytelling and the director understands that and really pushes you to the next level.
Yeah.
So anything that challenges us would be the goal.
Awesome.
So really it's mm-hmm. those life-changing films that I'd love to work on, you know. And it doesn't have to be something that's the most famous. Just has to be something where the story changes your life. You watch it and you're like, something like The Matrix, the first Matrix film, you watch that and your whole life is different afterwards.
Yeah.
And the sound played a big part in that film as well, you know. So that's the type of thing we would love to work on.
That's cool, dude. Yeah, that's awesome. Nice. That's a good answer. These answers get better every single
they
time
do.
We answer
they
this question.
They really do.
Yeah. Like, that'll be hard to top. I pity the next. is there anything else you need to with this opening, Sebastian? Anything you want to ask Alex? Anything
actually,
you want to know?
Yeah, no, actually, I'm very curious of like the origin of the name 344 Audio. Ooh. Like, what is there a significance behind that for you, or is just something that you thought sounded cool?
Yeah, so at the time when I was transitioning away from just being Alex Gregson, sound designer, to coming up with a company name, I looked at a number of different company names, and I had a few in my head that I was 100% set on, but they were all taken.
Oh.
So nearly every name for an audio company has been done by somebody, and I knew that our company was going to be international, so I had to be careful about that. And I realized and set myself on something. I remember it was from acoustics class at university, and it was talking about the speed of sound, and the speed of sound is 344 meters per second at sea level. And this differs depending on who you ask.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people say it's 343 meters per second, But I actually
can't do 343.
I was going to use 343 originally, and then I thought, this doesn't sound right. It needs to be 344. But then I searched 344, the speed of sound, and it is also one of the commonly accepted measurements. It depends who you ask, if it's the Americans or the British or the Germans or whatever. But 344 is one of the accepted speeds of sound.
And plus, if you'd chosen 343, people would be thinking you do the sound design for Halo.
Exactly. So that's where it came from. But yeah, it's the speed of sound, and the idea being that, you know, we work quickly and efficiently, and that was the concept behind it originally.
In a sort of a like going on for that question, explain the logo.
Yes, absolutely. So our logo, 344 Audio. So if you take a look at some of the font and some of the kind of design here, I don't know if you can overlay something on the podcast, but you can see that the text is made up of a custom font that actually represents pipework. So it's kind of industrial pipework that you'd see on machinery, and the D is like half of a cog. So we've always had a cog in our logo, and the cog represents the Industrial Revolution, which was started in Manchester, where we're based. So we're very, very proud of our heritage, and we want that to come through in all of our branding. We are the Audio Craftsman. So We Are the Audio Craftsman represents We Are the Audio Craftsman represents the idea that we're not just sound creators, we're crafting this sound from the beginning of the project, from pre-production. And just for people listening as well, before anyone says this, we've had this a few times over the last couple of years, a couple of people have pointed out, why is the word craftsmen? The word is not craftsmen, the word is craftsman.
Craftsman.
And it's because in the dictionary, it's a gender-neutral term. If anyone on the podcast complains about that, it's a gender-neutral term, so we're not changing it. And then you'll see established 2012. It shows a heritage while it's...
I know that one. That's when you started. Score one
that's
for the boys
you,
back
that's
home.
That's when you were with us. From the
beginning. I was in Salford, going through a lot of depression and a lot of ale.
Absolutely. So yeah, it's having that heritage branding. So in the film industry, a lot of companies brand themselves with like a blue minimalist font, thin fonts. We went everything in the opposite. We went for a dark Victorian green colour, a custom font that was thick and quite masculine in the way it looks, because we want to give a feeling of a grandfatherly vibe to our clients. We want to be a guide to you, not, hey, we're edgy and we're diverse and everything. It's more old school principles like, we will deliver on time, we will be efficient, we will actually care about your project like it's the last project that we do. So we try and put that into all of our branding. And some people hate it, and that's totally fine, but it works for us and the clients that we work with.
I hate it, but I keep coming back because I like to hate fuck. No, honestly, like the warm welcome, just the vibe of like going from your little apartment bedroom to this now is awesome. You know, being part of your journey has been a pleasure for me. And
that's been that, you know, working with you over all of this time has been absolutely amazing, because I've also seen the growth that you've done.
You're gonna make me cry on my own podcast, man. Shit. So he's proud of me.
If we look at the first film we worked on, The Monster Inside, and compare it to the...
Let's not look at The Monster Inside.
No, you compare that to the stuff that you're doing now, and like in every area, you've grown as we've grown. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So as our company's grown, your films have grown, like the budgets have got bigger, the style of the film has got better, the storytelling has got better, every part of the moving cogs have moved in the right direction.
There's that word again.
There you go.
Damn, that was a very fulfilling answer. I'm so full. We need to go for a break so I can shit it. I just farted and I shit it. Are we ready to go for a break, Seb? Is that cool?
Yeah, I think on that note, we should probably go to a break.
So on Spotify, bun you lads, you get the ads. But if you're on YouTube, cue the trailer.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow. Every time I watch that trailer, erections. Right.
Erections?
Erections.
What trailer?
On YouTube. Have you not been watching the podcast, Alex?
I've not.
We brought you on the podcast and you haven't been watching?
I've not seen. I've only seen the one you sent me from Ben.
Wow.
That's why I was confused that you were doing
it. Wow.
I didn't even know it was on YouTube yet. I thought it was just still on Spotify.
No, we've been on YouTube for the past... Well, I don't know when this episode's going to be released, but past couple of weeks.
Oh, just last couple of weeks. Okay. Yeah.
Cool. Well, past couple of weeks right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Dan, dude.
Now.
Right. Well, you got two episodes to watch when you get home.
Cool.
When you're working on your house. No one told you you could talk. Wow. And Mike didn't even pick you up, probably. It's from the cheap seats.
That's one of them where they put it in, like, stars, the producer, semicolon, and then...
Mobile phones off during the production. Actually, speaking of mistakes, I need to... So this episode's already been released, but I need to apologise for... we had Anthony on for the composer recently, yeah. And we're talking about Lord of the Rings. And my dumbass thought James Horner did the music. It's actually Howard Shaw.
Yeah.
Yeah, I done goofed. I done fucked up. And do you know, like, if you watch that episode, like, you can watch it now because it'll already be out by the time you watch this episode. Huh? We were talking about Matrix earlier. I'm so confident in my answer. And I just want to slap myself. You dumb son of a bitch.
Can you not just VO that in and cut away?
What, like during like the Simpsons, Howard Shaw. Right, no. So we got to know you before the break. We are back now. Let's talk about some Westwise the Raven. Mm-hmm. I know Sebastian. Yes. He has a question.
What's that?
you got it's... amnesia, boy.
Well, I mean, it's only the hottest short film coming out of Birmingham.
Yeah, man, you worked on it.
Oh, that one.
Yeah. You've done so much since then, you know. No, okay. It's not even in my files anymore. So, Sebastian, kick us off, bro.
Right. So, obviously, now we're talking Westwise the Raven. So, can you break it down for us how you and your team kind of built the soundscape for Westwise the Raven? And, you know, what was it like collaborating with Ross and Ed? I know you've worked with Ed before, but now you have Ross in the mix. Did it change the dynamic? How was it for you?
I think the first thing I would say is whenever I've worked on a project where Ed's involved, I always feel like the story is really well considered, regardless of whether it's a comedy or it's an action film or whatever it might be. But when you're not directing the film, it always still feels like you're involved a lot, which is a good thing, because then
I put my dick in everything.
Because then, even if there's a different director, I still have a continuity through the thing. Now, on this one, I think what was different was there was a lot more at stake than some of the other films, and because you weren't directing it, you had to put your trust in someone else, and obviously that meant that where I could usually ask you a question and say, "What are we going to do about this?" you would have to say, refer to Ross.
Go to Ross, yeah.
And that was interesting. But I think one of the things that was interesting about this process was when we were in pre-production, Ross was kind of very adamant he wanted it to be real. Like, oh yeah, it is mystical Westwise the Raven, but make the sound real. And then as soon as we reached post-sound and he heard the murmurs of a creative sound design, he was like, more, 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 you know? And then we
like
just,
I was trying to tell you.
Yeah, literally. So I think one of the ways that was interesting that we worked was once Ross discovered that more was what he wanted with creative sound design and storytelling with that, I then started to split this between the team, and Danny from the team here did a lot of the really interesting crow sound design. So he basically did that on his own. And because he focused just on that, it really became a nice storytelling element. And I think it was one of the big reasons that we got nominated for a Best Sound Design Award in the Music and Sound
We got Awards. Nominated a lot for sound design.
Yeah. So I think a lot of the stuff that we did in that process helped. And then we split out some of the other work, like some of the sound effects editing. I think together, though, with me, Ed, Ross and Ben, we built a lot of the most meaningful stuff together in the room together, like the fight scenes we did together. Like, we just shared that on Instagram, that one that you saw.
We've spoken a lot about the fight scenes on the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's becoming like a bit of a mainstay for people to talk about, because it's kind of like this sort of, it's like it's slap bang in the middle of the short where like most people are going to be paying attention.
Yeah.
Like, people get their bums in seats and it's like, why am I watching? Oh crap, it's all kicked off. And it's like, why am I staying? Oh, Rivon is a badass. Like, it's a nice sort of well-rounded short, in my opinion.
I think one of the things that was really good about this project as well was Anthony, the composer, worked really well with us to make the composition and the sound design fit as one. So instead of just making like epic Viking music and slapping it on the film and saying, well, I want my music at the forefront, Anthony was like actually really open to having, you know, oh, in this scene I need to back this off a little bit, but then here I need really to go heavy.
Yeah.
And I think we needed that, because if the sound was so dramatic but the music wasn't, there's something just wouldn't have sat right. But in the end, I feel like we crafted something so nice where it's so serious and so kind of epic when the battle's going on, but then when the battle subsides, we've got the really nice vocals that Anthony brought in, and then we backed off our work and let his, you know, his work take the forefront.
Chloe was amazing on the vocals. Absolutely. We spoke a lot about her during Anthony's episode, but she's she like, it's like something so, I don't say minimal, but like, you know the smallest things have the biggest impact. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think everyone involved wanted the same thing, and that's a big thing on films. I've worked on films of all different budgets, and what I've noticed is it doesn't matter what the budget is of the film, if everyone wants the same thing and no one gets the ego pushed into the project, you get the best result. The problem comes when there's one person who's pushing that ego constantly into the project, and then other people are trying to do something interesting, and it gets sucked out, and then it just ends up being a really vanilla version of what it could be. But on this, everyone wanted it to be epic. Everyone wanted to have the little pocket of where they could shine.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and that's why it ended up being such a strong film.
Sebastian knows a lot about working with egos. That feature you're working on had the world's biggest ego.
It was a fucking nightmare. Working with someone paying so much money, dropping so much money to make a feature film just so he could play director.
Absolutely.
We'll make sure that movie doesn't come your way, Alex.
If he's got
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to have to charge you for the new chair I need to do this.
No, dude, honestly, like the continuity, well, there was no continuity. It didn't exist on that set. It was fucking insane. It was absolutely fucking insane watching this director come onto a set that's been dressed and has been told many times it's a hot set, and just moving shit, not calling the production design, not calling in props. He's just moving shit, and then they come in and like, wait, no, like, oh, it's fine, it'll be fine. Okay, your editor's gonna have a fucking aneurysm.
And so's Alex.
Imagine the dialogue is just gonna be on every cut.
Oh, no. God. So the dialogue, the way he did that, he directed his actors line by line by line. With each line,
our camera guy literally just like, he's crying.
He got seven different takes of each line, so there is no consistent performance.
That sounds horrible.
It was awful to watch.
That sounds more student film than anything I've ever worked on. And I've worked on a lot of student films.
Same, dude. It was like just a giant student film.
A giant student film. Oh, God, they've evolved. Someone stop them. Someone burn it with fire. But no, like, talking a little bit about the collaboration process, it is a little bit weird for me, to be honest, to, like, I need to stop scratching my hair. There'll be things in it. But it's like, taking a step back and like, not taking a step back, but watching you and Ross sort of, like, you'd only ever heard of Ross, you'd only ever spoken to Ross. But then, like, I arrived, like, a few hours later, because, like, Ross and Ben, they had to come here, like, super early doors. Then I arrived just after lunch. And you, like, it was like you guys had already started this, like, relationship. You're both bouncing off each other. It was awesome. And that's why I kind of, like, right, I need to find who else needs help. Danny was working away. Then I went downstairs, and Frankie was like, yo, do you mind just, like, sort of helping me on Foley? I was like, absolutely. I just love everything about Post Sound, like all the nuances that go into it. It's like when I first hired you, it's like, Alex, can I get Post Sound? And you're like, well, Ed, what do you need? Do you need Foley? Do you need a mix? Like, do you need composing as well? So, like, yes. it was the team, just everyone came together. Everyone had input, and like you can hear it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
We had a few issues, like editing with the Great Hall, because it was great.
Yes, absolutely.
And the hall.
Yeah, the big hall scene, the way it's like, sort of, that I shouldn't be teasing too much, but it's like, when you see it, like, people understand, oh, yeah, I understand.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a bit of a battle, wasn't it, in that particular scene, to get the dialogue to sit consistently, which is interesting because some of the other scenes you'd have thought were more difficult.
Yeah,
you know, like the fight scenes and things like that. But yeah, that particular scene. But I think it's because it's like the introduction, and it needs to catch you. If it doesn't catch you, you kind of lose the production value.
Yeah.
So it was so important to get the dialogue to sit right in that scene. And I think we got there in the end.
There's more dialogue in that scene than like any other scene as well. So like that had to be right.
Absolutely.
But yeah. So, but speak, like, I know you have a lot you want to say about the current political landscape of how the film industry treats sound designers, post sound composers. Tell us more about that. Tell us what you want to talk about. Me and Sebastian are here to listen. We're here to respond. Is there anything you think the film industry can do to sort of help the visibility, so to speak, of sound designers, more so than, you know, just an Oscar for the biggest movies? And then, you know, the biggest, most politically accepted shorts. Would you like, so take us through?
I think there's a few things that play with the politics of the film industry, and one of them is the focus. This is specifically in the UK, but I think it also happens in the US as well. The focus on only building the industry in the London. Yeah. Let me start again.
I hit my mic.
So I think there's a few things at play here in regards to the politics of the film industry currently in post-sound. One of them is the London, I call it the London-centric film economy. So in our country, in the UK, if you think about it, London is like a mega city, and a lot of the other cities, while they're powerful in themselves, they don't really have the financial backing to produce things like films and so on and so forth. And this then perpetuates this constant hamster wheel of productions being made in London. And while that started to change, and they've started to try and force this stuff out into different regions like the north of England and the Midlands and so on, what's happening is the post-production is not coming with it. So no. They're shooting all these epic things, like Batman was shot in Liverpool, and then Peaky Blinders, Birmingham, etc.
Mission Impossible in Birmingham. Manchester.
Yeah, Mission Impossible, but they're never bringing the post to these other areas of the UK, and I think there's a number of reasons for this. I think there's a lot of people that don't want it to change because they've got a stake in it, but I think it takes people like us, people like you, and, you know, other companies to actually take that capitalistic stand and say, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, and I'm going to make this change myself, even if there's risks, even if people don't tell me it's not going to work, even if I, every so often, I have to tell someone, go screw yourself, you're not better just because you're in London. Even if I have to do that, I'm willing to put myself in that position.
Yeah.
One, to create jobs for other people that I didn't have the opportunity for myself when I started out in this region. But also, because I just think it's time for a change. And I think one of the big problems we have is people from the other regions of the UK feel like they kind of have to beg London to give them the scraps of post-production. Whereas the way I look at it is, we shouldn't be begging them. They should be wanting to come to us because we're showing our value and our skill. And that's the direction I'm taking the company in now. So that's one aspect of the political side of the film industry. I think the other one is, there is like a I mean, there always has been. The film industry is one of the most liberal industries in the world, and being that it's in the creative field as well. And I think when there's someone who works in the film industry who maybe doesn't have the same viewpoint, they do have to suppress that sometimes, and they have to be careful about things that they say. Again, for me, I'm not going to censor myself for other people, you know. Like this company, you know, we're a Christian-owned company. I'm a Christian. I'm not as liberal as most of the people who run these companies, or at least show on the outside their liberalism. So that's a challenge sometimes. I mean, what I tend to find, though, is the more honest you are about who you actually are, and you don't follow the ideology, and you don't kind of swim with the rest of the fish, you tend to find you get the more interesting collaborations, because people actually trust you more when you're honest, even if they don't like it.
Yeah.
So we work with a lot of people who might not share my viewpoints on the world, but because I'm honest about them, they respect it and they can actually understand it. Whereas if I was just like, oh, I agree with everything you're saying, they're like, can I trust that?
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're the two things at play that I'm really, you know, pushing out there, you know. The fact that you can have you know, a post sound company in the north of England. You can have a company that's in the film industry but isn't run by someone who subscribes to all of their ideologies. Because at the end of the day, it's not about that. It's about making films, and it's about making films sound good, look good, storytelling wise, be good. You know, I can work on a film that's about a subject that I don't agree with, and I can still do a really good job on that. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%.
I don't have to have a certain viewpoint or an ideology to make great sound for a project, and I think that's something that I'm starting to notice that clients are accepting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if there's a client who is more on that side of the ideology, they don't bring that into the work with me because they just know who I am and they don't need to. They trust me that I'm not going to judge them and they're not going to judge me. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that those two are the two, I think, political things at play, but they kind of always have been, and you know, for some time always will be in our industry. And I think it just takes a couple of people to shift the conversation a little bit. You're seeing some of this happening already. Like, look at Angel Studios. You know, they brought out The Sound of Freedom. That was a big one, you know, a more conservative leaning film, again by a Christian owned company. So yeah, there is a slight shift starting to happen, and I would like to see more of that. I'm not saying that certain ideologies should be shut down. I'm just saying that I'd like to see more of a variety of things. If we're making films about, you know, certain people's activism or certain people's rights, or we're trying to tell a political story, why are we not telling both sides of a political story?
Yeah.
Why are we not making a film about someone who goes through struggle in, like, Christian religion, if we're making a film about someone who goes through struggle in Islam? That's the point I'm trying to make, you know. And I'd love to work with more people who are looking at this bigger picture and trying to, you know, make films that are a bit more wide ranging in their viewpoints.
Nice.
So
nice. Yeah.
So talking about Raven, is there a specific moment for you that kind of clicked, like, yeah, we've got something here? Was it like a specific piece of sound design, or was it when, you know, a scene kind of came together with everything? Was there a specific moment for you that, you know, again, this is something special, this is going to be great, you know?
I'm not going to lie to you. I don't even know why I felt this way, because obviously I've worked with Ed so many times, but when Ed said, Alex, we're making a Viking movie, and then you told me a little bit more about it, at first I thought, okay, cool. But then when you were like, oh, we're making a Viking movie, and it's going to have this, and it's got this lore, and I've written this, I was like, oh, please don't, like, make a really crap film. Like, that's... and this is the thing, like, me and Ed have got that relationship. We can be honest with each other about things. And when he said that to me, in my head, I was like, please don't make a crap film, please. Because I was thinking, how are you going to pay for this? This is going to be expensive.
Yeah.
And then when I saw the first few stills, I just knew you'd fucking nailed it. When you sent me over, like, a couple of stills, I was like, this is fucking cool. And I just knew from that moment. I didn't even have to watch it. I just knew it was going to be really good and really powerful. And I knew that the sound was going to have to match the visuals.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe, like, the earlier films we did, it might have been the other way around. Do you see what I mean? The visuals were not quite matching up to the sound. Whereas this time, we had to challenge ourselves to match your visuals.
Oh, that's cool.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. That's also, like, it wasn't even a bit of the movie. It was a still.
There
you go. There you go, Lou.
I just love the brutal honesty. Don't make a crap movie.
Well, no, that's like that's it. Like, you know, there's moments in Caretakers that, you know, me and you were like, this is going to be a challenge. Yeah. Like, there was so many variables to Caretakers, though, mm-hmm. that, like, it was a web series that we kind of, like, Frankensteined into a pilot.
A pilot.
It was crazy. It was a fun time, though. Everyone that worked on that, it was great. Yeah. But, like, then I came back. It was the first thing I did in 2020, literally before COVID said, sit down, shut up. I remember coming here with you, and I was like, I was tearing up a little bit because, like, you know, Caretakers was such an important time in my life. But now I've kind of, like, moved on. Like, the new Caretakers is Westwise the Raven now. Mm-hmm. And it started as a short. We're creating a feature. Shit. No, we're not. Maybe. is it a series? Who knows? But yeah, like, we, you know.
Yeah, throw them off the trail.
It's not finished. It's not finished. Mm-hmm. And I would love 344 to, you know, continue on the journey with us.
Absolutely.
But yeah, thank you for talking about Westwise the Raven. Thank you for talking about politics and sound. Thank you for being on the podcast. You've been a long time fan. Every now and then you message me how, like, you've listened to an episode, and it's like I had to stop working because I was laughing so hard. So we appreciate that. But I know, Sebastian, you have a piece of information.
I do. So 344 Audio is going to be at South by Southwest, which is insane. Like, how did you make that happen, dude? Like, how did this all come together?
So I think one of the great things about the country that we live in is that, you know, as much as we have problems with politics and the government and everything, we do live in a very generous country when it comes to free stuff, let's say, in inverted commas.
Buy one, get one free.
and one of the things that the UK government's really pushing at the moment is innovation. So there's an organisation called Innovate UK that's run by the UK government and paid for by, you know, taxpayers' money. And what they do is they identify innovative and disruptive companies, and then they invest in them in a number of ways. It can either be with support, grants, loans, whatever the need of your business is. And we were, we were graced with a grant from Innovate UK, which we used and combined with our own funds to reinvest into the company. So we upgraded our room here, our mix room, to Dolby Atmos, which was amazing. Bought loads of new equipment that's really enhanced the way that we work with clients. And we also rebuilt our Foley stage from the ground up. We ripped everything out and built it all up again. And we've also been fortunate enough to get some funding to make some designs for a future project that I can't talk about too much yet.
Damn.
But this is going to be big. This is going to change the entire UK post-production landscape, and it's all to do with the politics and everything I'm talking about earlier on. If I'm just being honest with you, I can't wait to disrupt things a bit. I can't wait to shake up the UK industry and show that we're here. You know, we're here for good, and we're here we mean business. You know, and now as a continuation of that, I applied for another scheme through Innovate UK, which is to go to South by Southwest on a UK trade mission. And I'm going with a number of other UK creative businesses, some that work in the film industry, music, etc. It's going to be so fun. So if there's anyone out there who would like to meet or talk about, you know, either working on films together, looking at our sound effects libraries licensing, or even looking at our courses, I'm going to be at South by Southwest. Please DM us on Instagram, DM me, Alex Gregson, on LinkedIn, and I'd love to meet you. So I'm super excited. We're going to be going in a few weeks, and I can't wait to be in Texas.
Hell yeah, man. I know you love a bit of Texas.
Yeah, have you ever heard that song, All My Exes Live in Texas?
All my exes live in Texas. There's a few people out there that's like, wait, I heard that on a Drake song. Well, he samples, you son of a bitch. But no, yeah, Alex, thank you so much for coming on to Freeballing.
No problem.
You for everything you've done for Freeballing. Thank you for everything you've done for me as a creative, and thank you for everything you're doing for the UK as a creative. It's been absolutely awesome having you here. Thank you for allowing us to come into your amazing building. As short as it was, I now have to go get my ass home. But yeah, please, everyone at home, go give 344 a like if you are going to be at South By, or if you want to try out their online courses, like Alex said, DM him. But then again, also don't forget to like, subscribe, comment on Freeballing YouTube and everywhere you can find a podcast. Spotify, our podcast, you know the place, you know the deal, you know the rules. 2024, thank you very much. See you next time.
Ding. Deuces.
Come join us on this trip. Now all night to the throwing out the scripts.
Come on, man. Come join us on the trip. I'm sorry. Now we're throwing out the scripts. I hear we don't charge a penny. I hear the weekend's calling. Now it's time to start. Free ball.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.